This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm Ursula Rudenberg.
I'm Pat Schlarbaum. This is our first show in the year 2015.
Local Talk is a result of the collaboration of many people who come together to share their talent and dedication and interest in our community. And all of us on the Local Talk team are honored and excited about exploring community life this year. We feel so much appreciation for the many people who have come on the air during the shows in 2014. I know that for me, this never stops being an incredible learning experience for which I am more grateful than I can express.
KHOI's mission is to build community through communication. So we thank all of you who have opened up to share your knowledge, ideas, feelings, and vision. And we thank you for listening. We hope that our show has been able to introduce you to some new things and ideas, and we hope that some of you will come to speak on our airwaves this year.
We wanted to start the year by just taking a moment to look back and reflect on the voices of this past year. So let's sit back and listen to some of the voices we heard on local talk shows throughout the year of 2014.
We have Elwin Taylor on the line. Is that right, Elwin? Are you there?
I'm delighted to be with you today.
What is the polar vortex?
Sometimes we have what we call polar outbreaks of cold air. That happens almost every winter, where we get air that originates, it's very dry and starts off very cold as the air flows out of the high Arctic area into the Midwest. This would typically happen two or three times during a winter. The very cold air that we have had this past week is polar outbreak number five for this winter season.
In Iowa, just like we like to curl up, stay as warm as possible, the bees do too. So they will group up in one big ball in the center of the hive, roughly, and the queen will be at the center to make sure that she stays warm enough, and that center of the hive will be 90-some degrees. And they really stay close, so they keep each other warm through the winter. If you put your ear next to a hive, you can hear it buzzing, or at least you hope you can. They'll start cleaning things up. They'll throw dead bees out the front door. They're not hibernators. They're actually buzzing around, and they have to use that buzzing to keep warm.
When I went to Iowa State University, they had the glassblowing club there. It's called the Gaffer's Guild. It's always been that name as far as back as I can remember, and even before I was there. And it's the club is still functioning today. It's tremendously large. Being an art student, one of my ceramic teachers said, "Hey, you should go over and see this thing." And I went over there, and it was just, oh, I just fell in love with it. I just like, this is what I want to do. Absolutely hooked on it. I mean, just boom. Yeah. I tell you, I could work at glasswork until the day I die and never exhaust all the things there are in glass.
I'm the Director of Sustainability for Iowa State's Government and the Student Bodies. One of our main projects is starting a recycling program in the library, in Parks Library. Also, we have started a bike share program with industrial design students. Right now, they're designing them, I think, from scratch to start a new program. Also, we have implemented bike pumps on campus so people can fill up their bikes' tires. And also, are starting a swap site for students and faculty and staff so you can go in between, like, for books and tickets and furniture so that keeps them out of the dump.
These are the owls commonly called hoot owls. During the depths of a long Iowa winter, there are owls that have successfully incubated eggs this time of year. According to birder Denny Thompson, a pair of great horned owls were seen feeding young at the Polk City Wildlife Refuge in central Iowa late last week. During mating season in December and January, male and female great horned owls hoot back and forth to each other. Their mating rituals include bowing to each other and rubbing bills. When ready to nest, they do not build their own nest, but instead seek out existing sites. With its long ear-like tufts, intimidating yellow-eyed stare, and deep hooting voice, the great horned owl is the quintessential owl of storybooks.
I've been here in Eastwood for about 4 years now, in Ames, period, about 10 years.
Would you describe Eastwood to the people that don't really know about Eastwood?
A quiet community. It's not as bad as people say, think it is, or that they, you know, separate Eastwood from the rest of Ames because they think it's drugs and all type of stuff over here, but it's not like that. It's actually quiet over here, and it's a good place for your kids.
What's your impression of the Ames community as far as what's going on around here? What's there to do here?
There's actually nothing to do here.
What do you mean by nothing?
They don't have any activities for the teenagers. They have nowhere to go, nothing to do. That's why most of them are in trouble all the time, because it's nothing for them. They have to go to different cities to, like, for skating, anything like that. It's nothing in Ames like that.
So you mean there's basically nothing in Ames for blacks to do here, or no get-togethers, no cultural events, no nothing?
No nothing.
All politics are local, and there's no finer example in my mind than the caucus process that you go through in the state of Iowa. It's the ultimate in grassroots politics, especially in a non-presidential year. It's also more important because your voice counts for that much more, because, you know, when you have a handful of people showing up in a precinct, you know, your voice means a lot, and this is where the whole process begins for setting the party platform. Your voice can really make an impact.
This year, in honor of the sesquicentennial, I'll pronounce that slowly, and I did a resolution in the Senate. It was back in 1864, in December, that the first 12 blocks of the city of Ames were platted and recorded. That was 150 years ago, and the city is going to be celebrating its 150th birthday all year long. So there's going to be a special expanded 4th of July festival. There's going to be, in the autumn, a Dinky Days celebration. You know, the little railroad that ran between the center of town and campus. In December, there will be a Platting Day festivities. That looks like a very interesting year. Gave us a chance to write up a resolution touting all of Ames' wonderful qualities, the home of Iowa State University, of course. And it mentioned some of the ways in which the city of Ames has been recognized for its livability, for the best small places for business and careers, for its retirement. The quality of life here is really quite terrific. And it was a great pleasure for me to be able to get the Senate of the state to acknowledge that.
A lot of people say we love vision and all that, but they don't even know what's going on. In 1985, there was the Ash Bash. In 1988, there was a campus town disturbance. 1991, there was a vehicle accident. And a question that we would raise is, have we done a good job explaining to those individuals what VSHA is about? That's why we're going focus once again on the purpose of VSHA. And if we can really put that out and get people to understand what VSHA was intended to do, I think we can then all get on a common starting place. And then take a look at what we're doing now. Is that consistent with what we're supposed to do? And if it's not, we have a decision to make. Whether we want it or whether we like it or not, the party activities are tied to VSHA.
What is your favorite VSHA tradition?
Personally, mine was VSHA Village. Yeah, I really like the Humane Society comes and the Reptile House comes and... Yeah, I just like the animals that come.
Yeah.
And they have really fun little robots and things that come around. Like last year they had a Wally robot.
Do you prefer VSHA or unofficial VSHA?
I had a whole bunch of friends who were going to come down with me and they couldn't. They didn't want to because it got canceled. So
yeah.
Like a lot of people didn't get to experience VSHA. This awesome weekend. So
Cool. Yeah. All of my roommate's parents were coming for Visha Village in the parade, and they didn't get to come, so we didn't get to visit with all the parents, which kind of sucked.
Unofficial Visha, it's like, it's just about getting drunk, and there's not the school spirit. Yeah. No one's coming together to go to concerts or anything. It's just, I don't know. Yeah. It's not as fun.
This is actually my first year here. I'm not from Iowa, yeah, so I was kind of looking at different things to do, you know, just...
Were you part of what happened Tuesday night?
No, I wasn't. When I first heard about it, I'm like, really? I mean, I really don't know why anyone would tip over a car, you know? It's, I don't know if it was because of the alcohol they had in them, and even that's not even an excuse for it, but...
So, what do you think about the future of Visha? Do you think it'll be the same next year?
No, it's done. It's done. School spirit.
What, honestly,
I think they're going to make like an unofficial Visha from now on. Because kids are still going to party.
Well,
kids are
Do you guys prefer unofficial Visha? Like,
No.
Not at all.
No, we prefer Visha. I want real Visha. I want the cherry pies
and
the concerts.
It was even Buzzkill that's canceled right now.
Like, yeah, there's people out and everything and having fun, but like actually doing it. So, no, it's not the same.
There was a parade earlier this morning.
What?
Yeah, up by Molly Bio, they did a couple of the floats.
We totally would have gone. We were up super early. We totally would have gone.
We want to come and present you with.
Okay.
We collected
8,800
signatures.
You're out of order.
Do you not want to hear the will of the people?
Would you guys?
We have 8,800 signatures from people that your comment period cut off. You don't want to hear it because you don't want to hear what everyday Iowans have to say. Somebody here said that the commission should be made up of experts, but where are the environmental experts? The only expert that was an environmentalist on this commission got ironically sued for conflict of interest. Well, we have 8,800 comments from everyday Iowans. You look at the faces of these kids and tell them that they're Iowa.
I have lived here for 17 years now. I work at the Super Walmart here in town. I've been there since they opened. Once I find some place I like to land. I lost my mom and dad 2 years ago to cancer. They were divorced, so it was a little shocking. I come home the night after my mom's funeral. I fell and laid on the floor back there for all night. When I woke up, my leg was like a balloon. I had nerve damage. So that went on for a year, and then this whole zoning thing come up and trying to fight that and figure it out. So it's just been a vicious cycle. And now having to do all the moving and still try to get to work, yeah, it just seems like a never-ending cycle right now for me. I have to rip up my flower gardens. I have to take out all the stones and statues that I put down. You know, this was my home. I planned on, I guess, living my days out here, but I really knew deep down that it was going to be sold. The land was valuable, still is, so it hasn't been easy. It hasn't. To watch a place that I loved and lived be turned into apartment complexes. And in the mobile home park here, there are a lot of low-income or no-income families. So this won't be easy for them either.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and you're listening to an overview of some of the voices from our own communities that came to the airwaves in 2014.
This is our third year. It's an annual event that we do towards the end of April. And this year we have 7 Central Iowa yarn shops. It's our way of supporting local independent craft shops and making people aware that we're here and of the different things that we can offer. For example, our shop specializes not only in knitting and crochet, but also weaving, dyeing, and hand spinning. Some of the other shops also have specialties in quilting or needlepoint.
Story County has just sent a big message to any sort of big hog corporation, Mashoff, Pork, Christensen, any of these guys. Oh, we're open for business. We're going to work with you in whatever way possible to get this thing passed. So please, like, flood our county with as many factory farms as you possibly can. And that's what really worries me. I grew up just south of Ames, the country. You know, there's no protection from my parents who still live there from one of these things moving in next door and destroying their quality of life.
In my opinion, water quality in this state is is very poor, and these CAFOs, they really are impacting the water quality, in my opinion. Now, it was just a little over 500 feet to Indian Creek, number one problem, and number two, spreading manure in this area. More and more we're getting the tiling, and with the intakes and that, it's just really hard to keep the manure from directly entering those tiles and then directly to the stream. So I think that not just this CAFO, but any CAFO directly impacts water quality.
Based on data that EWG has assembled and data that the Iowa Policy Project has assembled, we've spent well over $3.5 billion in Iowa since 1997 on voluntary conservation programs for farmers in the state, and we're still having this conversation about poor water quality and soil degradation and precipitous declines in wildlife habitat. So we just have to take a deep breath and admit that relying solely on farmers to volunteer, it simply hasn't worked. What we should do is look at some of these abusive practices that disproportionately cause a lot of trouble in our waterways. There's a handful of practices that should not be accepted. Probably the best example is planting your corn and beans right up to the stream edge. Iowa State Science Assessment tells us that if we had a 35-foot buffer between cropland and streams, we'd cut phosphorus load by 18%, which gets us almost two-thirds of the way to meeting the phosphorus reduction goal. Just that one thing. So why don't we have a mandatory setback of only 35 feet between cropland and streams? Minnesota has a mandatory 50-foot setback, and Minnesota agriculture is doing just fine.
The land was about 2.5 miles south of Story City. And the best special thing was that there were 4 or 5 artesian wells on this farm. So it had been noted for some time for its artesian wells. And they gave forth a large volume of water. So then it was possible to dam up the water and make a lake. And they named it Lake Comar. And people came from, an area of 30 miles around. On Sundays, people would crowd around the pool to watch people swimming. This was unusual to see people swim. It was lined by trees, but it was a large area for a swimming pool, even in today's standards. It was about the size of 2.5 Olympic-size pools. And it was divided in half. They excavated half the size of the swimming pool to make it deep enough so there could be diving boards. And then they put a cement on the bottom of that half. And then there was a division of just old logs that were put down in the middle. So the sand bottom that was shallow was on one side, and then the diving area on another. And it was separated by this remarkable, very high tower. And at the top of the tower, there was even a diving board. And so many people would just go up there and jump off. But when I was 5, I was bribed with 50 cents to dive off that high tower, and I did it.
We talked our parents one time into letting us take a canoe trip. And we had a list of things we promised to do and not do, and kind of formally presented it to them, and they just kind of said, okay, it looks like you guys have thought about this, go ahead. And it was a 2-week canoe trip down the Des Moines River from Fort Dodge all the way down to the fairly new at that time Sailorville Dam. Now we were, I suppose we were 11, 12, 13 years old. So I suppose it was 1975. There weren't a lot of boat ramps. There was certainly no signage. We camped on sandbars, private land. There weren't really any campgrounds along the way. We just kind of paddled until we were tired and put up camp. And we got approached by people a couple of times, you know, kind of, hey, what are you kids doing out here? And, you know, do your parents know where you are? You can't be out here. Well, we explained to them that, you know, this was the deal. We were on a 2-week trip. It was fine by our parents. It was kind of funny. My father was a hog buyer for Hormel's, and so he knew everybody up and down the river valley. So I suspect there were frequent reports getting back to our parents about where we were at. And 2 or 3 times during that trip, my father would appear on a bridge overpass with a couple of bags of groceries. So I don't think we were too far out of sight for too long.
It's definitely bigger than the older school, and now we have more space to learn, and we can go out into like bigger areas with softer furniture. The older school, we had the art and music teachers used to have to share a room, and the old art room was turned into a classroom, but now I don't think we're going to run into that problem anymore. I'll probably miss a lot of the memories. Like all of the funny stuff that happens in the big boys' bathroom. My favorite funniest thing that happened in there was when there was this old fire alarm in there that didn't work anymore, and someone like threw their jacket up and it landed like right on it, so like they couldn't reach it. So they were like just jumping around trying to get it. And like he was trying to run up the wall and stuff. It was really funny.
You know, I get to do what I started out doing, playing rock music with teenagers. And here I am at the other end of the spectrum, and I am playing rock music with teenagers. And yes, I do think that's very fun. The biggest thing that's fun to me, though, is to see what happens to the kids in this 2-week crash course thing. I mean, that is the thing that I did not anticipate going into this. Is what a dynamic experience it would be for kids. I mean, I knew they'd get a lot out of it musically, clearly, and I knew how to map that out and do that. But the rest of it, the group dynamics of it, the being a leader, being a team player, and just watching what takes place there and being a part of that, that's the most amazing part to me.
All the peregrine falcons beginning to fledge. That means they're leaving their nest site. They're about 42 days of age, so they're just attaining their flight skills. Generally, everything goes well. However, young falcons can fly before they learn how to land. And in the process of trying to get back up to the eyrie, the nesting site, there are instances where they almost make it and then not quite. Hitting the perches is a learned skill that they acquire. They get close to the building or the cliff and swoop straight up. It's just that they miscalculate. And at the Capitol, we have Grand Avenue, where we're always concerned that they're going to get hit by cars. So, as a matter of fact, there was an incident yesterday where a young bird was on the ground. It's on the east side of the Capitol. There's a big stairway, and above that is what they call a portico, which is a big triangle. And often the northern niche of that triangle is where the nesting eyrie is located. And essentially this bird was right underneath it. It had some failed attempts to get airborne again. And it seemed to be kind of tuckered. The security people know to give me a call, so I got a call first thing in the morning, bird on the ground. Security forces, they have a pretty key role. They keep their eye on things. So they became the key people to share what the status of the birds are doing. Are you seeing birds? Are you hearing birds? First thing, you know, so they were between Grand Avenue and the bird. But the best part of it is we can take these birds to return them to the top, and within a few days, they're on wing. And they got a second chance. Quite often, they get an elevator ride back to the rooftop or up the stairs. We pick them up and take them up. These are the people's birds.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and you are listening to an overview of some of the voices from our own community that came to the airwaves in 2014.
Since 2010, through some changes in the budgeting practices of Story County, we've been able to cut $6 million of actual spending from the county budget, and we've been able to do that without sacrificing services to the citizens here in Story County. But we've also been able to lower the county's portion of the property tax levy, about a 7% decrease in the overall county portion of your property tax bill. We're fortunate in Story County that property valuations have increased. So we're pretty proud of the work we've done here in Story County. We continue to move forward, and we're excited for the prospects of a new year, and just I think the overall direction that Story County's taken in the last 4 years.
In April, we opened the new patient tower, the West Patient Tower, as we commonly call it. This spring, it opened up. We've been treating patients in that space since mid-April. The key features of our new tower are we have larger patient rooms. And so the new rooms are 240 square feet compared to the previous rooms that were 168 square feet. Bathrooms are also much bigger. And they have a number of features that are really focused on patient care and patient safety.
First, I would say that I believe Campus Town needs rejuvenation, that the students deserve it, the community deserves it, alumni deserve it. And I have had some concerns about the process. There are several aspects. First, I would say that the Historic Preservation Commission was rushed in their presentation to the council and probably needed to have another opportunity to come back and talk to the community. And what I understand is that there are two buildings in the Campus Town area, both in that Lincoln Way to the corner of Welch Block, that have historic significance. And in order to have ever been or to be eligible for historic district, which would then have eligibility for historic tax credits, losing those two buildings then eliminates any future possibility of creating that type of area.
A. Lewis Champlin Sr. moved here at the turn of the century, and his father had given him $10,000 to start a business somewhere. And they traveled all over the Midwest looking at campus towns, which were just thriving and new, especially these land-grant colleges. And they came to Ames and realized the town and the campus were really quite a distance from each other. They looked at Lawrence, Kansas. They looked at some other places, but they liked Ames. But there was nothing here except for rooming houses. So there were lots of people living in this area, but with no services at all from the city, really. And certainly no businesses at all. It was just a lot of young men just living in rooming houses. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a very, very new college, and it was called Iowa State College then, of course. So with the $10,000 from my great-grandfather, he built that first corner building, and that was built in 1906. Lincoln Way was going right by it, which at that time, you know, was the Lincoln Highway. He put his grocery store in the lower level, and he put the ballroom upstairs in, but it ended up being the Iowa State University Ballroom. It's where all the dances were held long before the Memorial Union ever existed. and had chandeliers, and it was quite a fancy place. That was where they had all the Iowa State University dances.
We're really excited. On July 4th and 5th, there will be tons of family-friendly activities out on Main Street. Multiple blocks of Main Street will be closed for this event. We were hired by the city to book the entertainment for the Danfoss main stage. The headliner on July 4th is Sierra Leone's Refugee All-Stars, outstanding African ensemble. It's pretty incredible that these gentlemen that are witnesses to atrocity, they play a music that is so celebratory of life and is very warm and welcoming and something that is celebrates the beauty of the world.
We're with the information booth. I'm just one of hundreds of the volunteers, and I have a very small part. I'm just amazed at all the people that have come together to make this celebration so special. It's amazing how many families there are down here too. They're from out of town and in Ames. I know several of them myself, so I know where they're coming from. It's been a total community event. It's just hugely successful. Yesterday's parade was just fantastic. My wife and I actually rode in it, so that was fun. There were so many people out there that were wanting to wave at you and thank you, and it was just phenomenal. Total fun. I'm looking forward to the two bands tonight, Buckwheat Zydeco and Robert Randolph and the Family Band. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to. But otherwise, it's been all the smiles and all the great times that people are obviously having. This is a great community where a lot of people come together. And now with KHOI in there, it's pretty awesome. You know, that's another outlet, another way that people can get local information in different areas. So Ames is a great community.
We had a wonderful night last night. We went biking along the High Trestle Trail, and it was late. The fireflies were out. The frogs were doing what they needed to do. And we ended up on the High Trestle Trail when all the fireworks were going off in about every 10 degrees of viewing area. All around us, there were fireworks going on. Every town was giving us their best shot. Incredible. We'd hear it. It sounded like thunder, just constant. It was just relentless. From the trestle bridge itself, we could see all kinds of things. It was just gorgeous. It was all there, yes.
It was just spectacular. I haven't lived in Iowa for a long time, and it was a really nice way to kind of reintroduce myself. It was so beautiful.
I haven't seen anything like that before. I'm from Ireland, and yeah, we're getting married next month.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, so it's really nice to come to Iowa. I just moved here in December, so I'm still learning a lot and seeing a lot of things.
Right now, well, we've eaten, we've listened to BJ, one of the best performers in the whole world. She charms the socks off everybody.
Yeah, we went to see somebody acting George Washington Carver, and that was really fascinating. That was in City Hall. He was in the character of George Washington Carver, and he just told us his life story and about coming to Ames and studying, and in a very conversational tone. It was really well acted. Yeah.
So after lemonade, we might go home and shake things off for a little bit and see what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just happy that they're doing it.
Well, we are winding down at our temporary location that has served us so well for the last 18 months plus, and closing up. We will be reopening at our brand new, wonderful facility in 4 weeks. So what we're doing right now is gathering together for a symbolic book brigade, a ceremonial event to celebrate everything that's been happening over the last few years, getting ready to move into the new building. We're passing 14 books in this ceremony, and they were selected by each of the 14 selectors. I guess I probably have a look of shock on my face because that's kind of what I'm feeling right now. I can't believe this day is actually here. It's the culmination of years and years of planning and an incredible amount of effort for many, many people. I'm, I guess, bursting is the best word, with excitement.
His name is Dia de los Cyclones, which is Day of the Dead, Cyclone. And when the Leadership Ames Chamber Group offered to let us have him on loan, I had no idea how popular he would become. He was painted by a tattoo artist, Hugo. A lot of people know Hugo. But he's not only painted as a skeleton, which a lot of people thought looks very scary. Everyone but our kids thought it was scary. They just loved him as a skeleton. But all over the skeleton are flowers and leaves and a big heart. And he's really, really colorful and unique. He's very different than all the others. It almost looks like he's a dinosaur. And kids love dinosaurs. And instead of being scary, which I thought they'd be scared of, they think that he's the most attractive one. We placed him right near Duff Avenue, 3rd and Duff. You can see our Psy statue from the parking lot of Panera Bread. So he's very visible. Everyone going down Duff, heading north, can see him. And it just from the very beginning felt like he belonged there. First of all of our kids, especially the little kids who we see at the Family Life Center, they loved Psy. They sat on his lap. They took photos with their parents. Once they spotted him, they were all over him. You know, kids love to be scared, so they love scary Psy.
September 1st, 1914, Martha, the last passenger pigeon, and it was captive, died at the Cincinnati Zoo. As news spread of her species' imminent extinction, Martha became a tourist attraction. In her final years, whether depressed or just old, she barely moved, underwhelmed zoo visitors through fistfuls of sand at her to elicit a reaction. When she finally died, her body was taken to the Cincinnati Ice Company, frozen in a 300-pound ice cube, and shipped by train to the Smithsonian Institution in our nation's capital. Many thousands of species go extinct every year, but we tend to be unaware of their passing. The passenger pigeon's decline was impossible to ignore because as recently as the 1880s, it was the most numerous vertebrate in North America. It made up as much as 40% of the continent's bird population. In the book, A Feathered River Across the Sky, Joel Greenberg suggests that the species population may have exceeded that of every other bird on Earth. Their flocks expanded to a mile wide and extended 300 miles beyond the horizon. They were so dense that they darkened the sky for hours as the flock passed overhead. In 1860, a naturalist observed a single flock that he estimated to contain 3.7 billion passenger pigeons. By comparison, there are currently 260 million pigeons, or rock doves, in our cities and countryside today. Probably the most terrible example of mass slaughter in the history of wildlife was not the bison, but the passenger pigeon. This is Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, and you're listening to an overview of some of the voices from our own communities that came to the airwaves in 2014.
Sometimes you just want it to be over with.
Because all you hear about on TV is Joni Ernst.
Joni Ernst. Yeah. Bruce Braley.
Yeah, all you just hear is them talking bad about each other, but they don't really talk about what they are going to do. When I listen to that,
it is very hard because when you want to be on a game, they have some person just talking about who they want to win and making it harder for other people to live. Millions of people are going to lose a job. You don't know if your parents are going to be one of those people.
Yeah, there's a chance that your parents can be one of those people who loses their jobs. And mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it'd be very hard for your family to, like, recover from that. And, like, okay. People come to our houses and knock on the door, like, have you elected this person yet? Are you going to elect? And, like,
It's super hard.
Like, I get what you're saying right there, but like a lot of people wouldn't want like other people like going to your house. How do they know like who you are?
Because they have like the mail records.
Exactly. Because
they called my parents, write out their name, like, and it was super weird.
My name is Ray Youngbear. I'm a Meskwaki tribal member. I live on the Meskwaki settlement, lifelong member and resident in Tama County, state of Iowa. My wife Stella and I founded the group in 1984. Previously, we employed roughly 100 Meskwaki singers and dancers over the years until it evolved to the point where we are now basically a family group. However, we do extend to friends and relatives on my wife's side and my side. And so poetry extends to traditional Meskwaki language, where my family recites in song and harmony the songs of our people. In that sense, we are cultural representatives. I'm also involved with, to an extent, I would say, the language, because I am one of the few, well, at that time, a long time ago, it was said to me by a very noted anthropologist that he could count on his hand the number of Native American writers and poets who could speak and write in their language, and I happened to be one of them. So from the five at that time, roughly 30 years ago, and so those things I attempt to impart to my kids as well, hoping that they can learn the Meskwaki language from conversations that my wife and I engage in every day. It's gotten to the point now, as they have gotten older, that they are now curious as to what we are talking about, because, you know, we will deliberately converse in Meskwaki until one of them will inquire, "What was that? I missed that. Could you, you know, clarify?" Which is where we want to take this.
There was a tree out by Jacobson Park. It was pretty well dead, and the neighbor got worried about it and cut down a branch off of it and sent it to the state to have it analyzed, and it came back positive for emerald ash borer. And that's the first that we've noticed it. Our park board and tree board, and this tree had been dead for a while. And then when we started handing out information at our tree sales and that, and telling people about what to look for, they thought, well, that's an ash tree, and it's been dead. So they just took a snip off of it and sent it in, and then it was confirmed that it was an emerald ash borer. We've been around, and we keep looking for this because we know it's coming. I think it's in 18 states right now, and it's in Canada. And the whole state of Iowa, I don't know if you know that, but it's quarantined because of the emerald ash borer. You cannot ship wood out of the state of Iowa without it being inspected, which is good because that's how the emerald ash borer really probably got here. Somebody transported wood to their cabin here or were going through and some fell off. But if you want to look, the top starts thinning out right up in the top. The leaves start dropping off in the middle of the summer or whenever. And then in about 2 years after that happens, the tree's probably dead.
So as we're looking for veterans that might be looking for work coming out of the military, directly from the military, I also think it's important to think about those individuals that might be reintegrating through higher education, getting that degree, and then going on to get employment. There's been a tremendous amount of larger initiatives to get veterans employed. I mean, it's quite remarkable, actually, at how many initiatives there are to help connect veterans with really great jobs.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and you are listening to an overview of some of the voices from our own community that came to the airwaves in 2014.
But I did have like a few professors that were, of course, Caucasian, and I'll have my hand raised in the class, and they'll look directly at me and then look over it. And I had some people, if I'm on the bus and it's like I'm the only open seat, no one else will come sit right there.
The first time I laid there, it was pretty quiet. Nobody really was walking around. They did it in segments, 4.5 minutes at a time, to represent the 4.5 hours that Michael Brown was lying on the street. And the second time I noticed, there was people asking questions, you know, what's going on, what's this all about, things like that.
You know, we're not saying that all policemen are bad. There are good policemen out there that protect the law and enforce the law to where everyone is treated fairly. So, you know, there are good police. But we've seen instances where there are bad police. And we believe that this is an institution that shouldn't have any flaws. It will have flaws, but the flaws that we see now are unacceptable in terms of America's creed. I don't want that to sound too poetic, but that's really what it comes down to. We have to call things out like this, and we have to work toward a change.
We as white people need to use our privilege to step up and say this is not okay. Everybody matters. Black lives matter. None of this is okay. And so I'm using my privilege to say enough is enough and that we're done. We're done with people being treated unfairly. We're done with people being killed for their color. We're done with the racism. We're done.
Mix It Up at Lunch Day was inspired by the fact that we found that the cafeteria really is probably the most segregated space in the school. Students do, especially once you get into the middle grades, start gathering into their cliques. As a result, a lot of students end up feeling excluded and left out. Also, a lot of bullying that results from various identity differences. So Mix It Up is designed to shut all of that down and get students to realize how much they actually do have in common by talking with someone they don't normally talk to. And schools actually mix up their students in various ways. But the goal is to ensure that students don't sit with the same people they sit with every day. And while they're at their tables, they can engage in a number of activities. A very common one is to have discussion prompts at the table. And they might be, you know, something fun and silly like, would you eat a live worm for $1,000? You know, so yeah. Kids get to talk about why they would or would not do that, and Mix It Up tackles some very serious problems regarding exclusion and bullying and lack of empathy, but it's a fun approach to that. They involve music and DJs and candy and parades and fun. It's lighthearted, and schools get so creative about how they actually engage in this day.
It's not what people give you back, it's what you know you've given to the community. One of the first ones I did when I started it was a gentleman. He ended up and had a heart attack with a 2% survival rate. The first and foremost thing is when they need help is to calm them, letting them know that help is with them. And then from there you take over and do what they need till the ambulance arrives. And with the help of the first responders and paramedics, he still walks today. That's the payback for what you do.
You know, this is all fascinating to me. Our Santa trains are just phenomenal. As of just a few minutes ago, we've got 7,268 riders. We actually are running 9 cars on this train. We've actually got seating for 300 in coach and 70 in first class.
We have a lot of the rural people that came in to the West Story pancake breakfast. All the way around, I don't even know, goes clear up to the south edge of Ames at least.
Yeah, we have people in Slater that was here. Huxley and some, quite a few of Ames is here. We built this building in 74, so it might have been 75, but we've had one ever since at Christmas time for Santa Claus. The women used to have a cookie party, a few of them.
And we got together and sacked up the candy for Santa to hang out when he came.
Well, it was all council, wasn't it?
Council people and the ones involved in the city. Paul was the town maintenance person. He was on the council, he was the mayor, he was the fire chief over the course of some 40 years. So that's our history.
Any minority religion, it's more difficult to keep the community together from, you know, with the onslaught of Christmas music and whatever goes on, you know. I mean, it's not always a conscious thing. It's the ambient environment is such that it's all either overtly or in some way Christian. The name's Iowa. There's a much smaller number of Jews, and if you don't do anything to reinforce your Jewishness, you're just going to become like everybody else. The Hanukkah story involves the rededicating of the temple, pushing back Hellenistic influences and saying, you know, this is what we are. You know, let's proclaim what we are and stick to it. It's sort of ironic in a sense that Hanukkah has achieved a level of importance that it has in competition with Christmas, but it's really the essence of what Hanukkah is. So, you know, we're bombarded with these influences. They're Christian now, they're not Hellenistic. And it's up to us to rededicate ourselves to what we really are. So we get together for 8 nights and we light candles and we remember who we are and what we are and we eat some latkes and reinforce who we are and what we are. And in a community like Ames, it's even more important to do those things because of this surrounding ambiance of something non-Jewish.
We're talking with one of the finest principals in Iowa, in Roland, Iowa, at the middle school level, John Sheehan. John, this is the day of the senior dinner. Tell us about it.
We are excited about this. This is one of our highlights of the year. Every single grade level gets involved. Fifth graders are out there as we speak, greeting our guests, escorting them in, talking to them as they take them to their seats, putting their coats behind their chairs. The fifth graders also did placemats that every senior will get in front of them that they'll be able to keep and take home with them.
And I have my personalized invitation.
Oh, yes.
Because I am a senior.
Yes. And that invitation was made by the sixth graders. So, yeah, that's what sixth graders' role is. And they'll also be serving the dinner today. And then our seventh graders have made up a bunch of goodie bags. And then they'll escort the guests out at the end. Eighth graders are kind of in charge. We, being the big dogs here, we kind of give them a lot of responsibility. So they did up all the party favors. They decorated, set up the gym. They'll tear it down. The whole idea behind it was to give back to the people who have been so good to us over time. And if we could do something to make their Christmas a little brighter, we wanted to do it.
You have been listening to Local Talk, bringing you some voices from Central Iowa that came to the airwaves in 2014 during this show.
What better way to end the show than to hear the voices of the people who work on Local Talk, who volunteer their time and energy and talents? Local Talk is the result of a collaboration between many people. They are the ones that are responsible for bringing these voices to make this show possible.
I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
And I love the show today.
I'm one of your hosts for today, Greta Anderson, together with Gail Seiler.
Hello, Greta, and hello to you, the listener.
And I'm here with my co-host,
Cynthia McClure.
Cynthia McClure.
Yes.
I'm Kay Potter, your host for today, together with my co-host, Stephanie Schubert.
Hello. Thank you for having me with you today, Kate.
I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Belinda Merritt and Paul Hertz.
I'm Kay Potter, here with KHOI's Community Service Appreciation segment.
I am one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, together with my co-host, Cheryl Benson.
Hi, Susan, and hi to you, the listener.
I'm your host for today, Pat Schlarbaum.
Let me welcome our moderator, Linda Merkin.
Thanks, Ursula. I'm glad to be here.
And I will turn this over to you now.
Thank you.
And this is Paul Hertz for Local Talk.
on KHOI.
This is Local Talk. I am Belinda Merritt, and I'm here today with Ursula Rudenberg.
This is Richard Morton, your board op / engineer for Local Talk. Rebecca Brown also does board op / engineering for Local Talk as well.
Hi, I'm Tom Beal. You've been listening to Local Talk.
You have been listening to Local Talk, bringing you some voices from Central Iowa that came to the airwaves in 2014 during this show.
KHOI is a radio production workshop as well as a show. We welcome your input. Come to our studio at 410 Douglas Street or give us a call at 292-2878. You can also contact us through our website. Again, that's khoifm.org. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
Okay. I think we got it.
Yeah.